I have some handouts.
First, take one copy of this and pass it around.
And these are Smith charts. You can take two or three of these as the thing goes around. If you run out, I'll make more next time around. Not that you will need this too much, because you can do it on the internet using the tool that you will have.
But take it for you anyways.
Now, we have homework due tonight at 5, right? What if I were to postpone that to Tuesday? You would love it?
Yes.
I have a homework already posted for next week. But instead of being Tuesday, that homework has been due Thursday. Our last homework number 14, is a longer homework. It's a week-like homework rather than a half a week-like homework. So, should we do that? The one that was due today, we'll collect it on. I mean, you've seen all the material for it, but it's still thinking time, perhaps. Okay? So you can think about it a little bit more in the weekend. It's already on Tuesday. And the other one is going to be collected on Thursday. By the way, I discovered something this morning. We have a class on Thursday. I thought we didn't have a class on Thursday. I thought it, you know, Wednesday was the last day of classes, but no, I was wrong. When is the last day of classes?
Thursday
noon. So we have a class on Thursday. Which makes it so much the better, you know, we can relax, we don't have to rush. And so we'll take it. So that evening at 5, the homework will be due, okay? And then our final exam is on Saturday at 1. With the homework postponed now to Tuesday, maybe some of you guys will actually do the optional problem.
What if we already did it?
And if you did it, great, yes, you will replace, if you did it right, you're going to replace a lousy grade, if you have a lousy grade, I don't know. And if you are all finished with that homework, don't present it, start the next one. The next one is long. Anyways, where are we? I think we are discussing more or less this curve. So we have a transmission line of some length L, and we have placed a short at one of its ends, and we are looking into it from the other side. At that other side, there is a voltage that is defined, the voltage, phasor voltage drop from top to bottom, okay? And then there is a current there also, phasor current, equal and opposite on two wires. And I'm assuming that that current will go through whatever electronics I connect this thing into. Of course, if I don't connect it into something, that current will have to go to zero, okay? So that's the situation. And an impedance is defined at the input terminals as the ratio of voltage to current. Voltage to current is impedance, okay? And using D'Alembert solutions, translating into the phasor domain, taking the ratio of the voltage to current phasors, we found out that the right impedance Z here, this Z, is equal to J times Z naught times tangent of beta L. Okay, L is the length, beta is omega divided by V, okay? And so therefore beta and omega are linearly proportional to one another, and so you can read this in terms of either beta or also omega, all right? So it's a function of beta as well as omega. And I don't have still my thing showing up there yet. It's coming. Okay, and this, if I normalize z by z naught, then I have j times. But anyway, so a complex impedance in general, we say it has a real part plus j imaginary part. This is the resistor part of impedance. This is just nomenclature. This is the reactance. For this particular case, there is no resistance. It's pure reactance. Reactance x is equal to z0 tan beta l. If we normalize reactance by z0, then it is the tangent of beta l function, which is depicted here as a function of beta l. And we were pointing out that this behavior, if we now consider l fixed, but omega to be the variable, this looks like a linear variation of the reactance with omega, and that is the behavior of inductors. For an inductor, the impedance is j omega l. So a very short length of a transmission line terminated at the other end is effectively a lumped element of an inductor. But as soon as the length of that transmission line starts getting comparable to lambda, by the time it reaches lambda over 4, this linear variation is violated, and we are no longer talking about a lumped element. Instead, we are talking about this distributed element for which we have generated our own set of rules. We know those rules. The tension, it's not this simple impedance relationship, it is this impedance relationship. It's a little bit more complicated. We need to rely on that, okay? So then, as we are approaching lambda over 4, very large variation, and then right after lambda over 4, and here I'm making my correction, right after lambda over 4, the behavior becomes simplified again. This asymptote here is reminiscent of the impedance of a capacitor. When you, and we saw that this amounted to a distance away from the short by lambda over 4. Okay, by lambda over 4, we came to that point. So if the length is slightly larger than lambda over 4, we are on this part of the curve. And this part of the curve with negative reactance and blowing to infinity is exactly the behavior of the impedance of a capacitor. Because the impedance of a capacitor, this is for the inductor, or the capacitor is 1 over j omega c. J can come upstairs as minus j, that gives us negative signs. And then omega equal to 0, make it blow up, okay, towards minus infinity. And that's exactly what we are seeing. So although we started with a shorted line, and although it is good to think of it as an inductor as we are increasing its length, the moment the length increases just beyond the lambda over 4, we are in an open situation. Our short has turned into an open. And that open, which is now a tiny amount of transmission line that is open, is of course a capacitor. We are seeing the capacitor's behavior. Okay? And this is not surprising at all. You have two conducting elements there, and they can store charge, and this will look like a capacitor exactly. Okay? So that's where we are. So we will be transiting from capacitive behavior to inductive behavior, and back and forth in an endless sort of a repetition as we make this go increasing, and as our variable becomes positive and negative, as depicted in this picture. Any questions? That's the main point. Yes?
We could do a similar analysis with an open end.
Why don't you do that at home? Okay? But exactly then, what you would have is, instead of a tangent, you would get a cotangent. Instead of sine over cosine, it's going to be cosine over sine. And it's going to be, I think it's going to be minus j times z naught times cotangent. And that is all nothing other than a shifted version of this curve. Okay. All right. So now, with all this, and of course, Jim's question was perfect, OK? Perfect question. And I had the perfect answer. We don't do everything in class. We leave some stuff for you to work out. Okay. There is a lot of discussion here. I already did some of that. Let's look at this circuit here. Okay. This circuit, maybe this circuit is deceptive. Okay. Whenever I see a circuit like this, to make it fit in the margin, I make my transmission line look smaller physically than the rest of it, but the others is implied. This is actually large, and this is small. Lumped circuits are always small compared to a wavelength, so that is, keep that in mind. But in any case, so in order to make this graphic viable, that's the way I plotted it here. I have a voltage source in series with a stub, shorted stub on the other end. Its input impedance is going to be consistent with this formula, J, Z naught, tangent, beta L. and it can be inductive or capacitive or anything in between. And we have a resistor here. We are interested in getting the voltage. What are we going to do? We're going to do voltage division. Okay, but instead of having a specific inductor of a capacitor here with j omega L or 1 over j omega C, we're going to use this formula. And this is a frequency response calculation, if you will. Here it is. I'm getting the frequency response. Okay? F is the input, V is the output, load voltage. Their ratio is a frequency response to remind you stuff that you used to do in DC to 10. And that is through the voltage division rule that we have. It's exactly this. RL, which is the resistor. And then again, this, on the bottom, I have the series impedance of the resistor and this stuff. Okay. Now, in this particular example, I think I take RL and Z0 to be the very same thing of 50 ohms, so they cancel out. Here's my frequency response. Then I turn in beta into omega over C because it's an air-filled transmission line. This is a frequency response. It's a function of omega as we are accustomed. Okay, so what do we do usually in EC210? We look at the phase or the amplitude variation of this with frequency, and I just plotted the magnitude of that frequency response. And that frequency response peaks at unity and it also nulls out at zero repeatedly. And this is the behavior, of course, we expected from the series and parallel resonances of that particular stop that we were looking at. Okay, we have zero voltage across the load. Every time, the stop looks like an open in its input terminals. Whenever it's open, then there is no current. If there is no current in the loop, there is no current through the resistor. Therefore, resistor voltage goes to zero. But once in a while, at the right resonant frequencies, the input looks like a short. Once again, okay? The input looks like a short. When input looks like a short, there is no voltage across it. The entire voltage of this becomes the voltage here. That is when the amplitude response goes to unity. It all makes sense. Any questions? And of course, it looks like a short whenever L is an integer multiple of lambda over 2. Periodicity by lambda over 2. Okay, lambda over 4 away, it looks like an open. Okay, so depending on that L is fixed. I don't know, maybe 5 centimeters or 10 centimeters. But now it will depend on the frequency. Okay, at different frequencies, the wavelengths are different. Therefore, that L is different. Fraction of a wavelength, but every time you're at the right frequency and that L is an integer multiple of lambda over 2, you have the short that is at the load end of that transmission line enacted at the input, and it looks like there is a short here. It's as if the current is going through right through. Of course, it's not going right through, it is going in and coming out, but that is the same equivalent behavior. Okay, at no expense of voltage. So there is no voltage drop across those terminals. The entire source voltage goes and appears across the load. And it's sort of a comp filter, if you will. Any questions? So one more example. In this case, we take a similar stub, but put it in series with yet another element, a lump capacitor. Okay? And once again, draw the amplitude response. And this is a little bit more complicated. It's still voltage division. And we now have 1 over omega C representing the impedance of this capacitor. And we still have a lot of noise, but we have shifted things around because the frequency-dependent behavior just also comes into the picture. And Mathematica nicely plots the thing for us. It's a shifted sort of a counterpart of the earlier example. Now, this is an important example, and this is actually like the prelude to a longer homework problem that you have. So why don't we look at that homework problem and go through that, okay? And so here's our homework that used to be due today, but now it is due to Tuesday. This is the next homework, okay? And the problem that I want to deal with is here. This time, I have an open-ended stub instead of a short-ended stub. Therefore, if I were to think in terms of input impedance, it has to be derived. It's going to be what you were asking. It's going to be some cotangent function. But the problem can be solved without working out that impedance because the questions that are asked can be answered by considering the behavior of the resonant stuff when it is an integer multiple of lambda over 4 in some sense or another. Okay? But it is an example where a distributed element is combined with lumped elements, and I can always say that I have a lumped circuit model for that. Okay, as far as the lumped circuit here is concerned, this distributed thing is just a two-terminal element. That is a two-terminal element with some unfamiliar impedance that's going to be described by cotangent function, but it is as far as I'm concerned, here I'm doing a lumped circuit analysis. Okay, with those things in mind, let's see what are the questions. And what are the givens of the problem? We have a 2 ampere current source. This is not a DC source, it's an AC source. We are now entering now the realm of cosinusoidal steady state. At this point, we are no longer worried about what happened when we connected the circuit. Presumably there were some bounces back and forth, but it settled down to steady state. The system has enough resistivity in it that you would settle down into something, even though our transmission line itself is lossless. There is a loss element in the entire system, so things would settle down. In the long run, you would have a cosinusoidal steady state in response to the cosinusoidal input in this case. All right? So we have an ideal current source in parallel with a 50 ohm resistance, and then we have a transmission line that is also 50 ohms, and a bunch of questions. All right? Frequency is given. Omega is pi times 10 to the 8. What else is given? The speed of light is given. The speed, propagation speed is given as 2 times 10 to the 8. It's not speed of light, but 2/3 of it. And based on those descriptions, then a whole bunch of questions. What is the signal wavelength? Reasonable question. If you know the frequency which is given, and if you know the propagation velocity, you can get the wavelength, because wavelength times the frequency, lambda f is equal to whatever the propagation speed is, in this case 2 times that. So you solve for it. I don't remember what the answer is. You guys can work it out. B. Since, and I'm going through this because sometimes it's really easier to learn. This was once upon a time an exam question. And when this was given as an exam question, the response to this was just like the response you guys had to problem number 2 in class. Everybody was shocked. People didn't do well in this, okay? After that, we promoted up or down, I don't know, into a homework problem, so it's a learning experience, all right? Since an open termination is located on the line at D equals 0, and that's here, what is the pertinent boundary condition involving the phasor I of 0 for all possible line lengths L, independent of line length, and what is easy as it can be? It's an open, it has to be I of 0 equals 0, right? So that is the... Now, that is a very important boundary condition. Because of that, you have a standing wave pattern on that line, independent of all the details of the connected electronics, okay? It doesn't matter what this stuff here is. You already are going to have a standing wave pattern on this. If there is any activity, it's going to be a full standing wave. Because if anything comes to the open end, it's going to be reflected with a reflection coefficient of unity. Therefore, it will always be superposition of equal amplitude, forward and backward going waves, and therefore there is always a standing wave. Okay? So, when we ask this question, does the transmission line support a standing wave in the above circuit for all values of non-zero L? The answer that students gave were mixed. Some said, sure, it's an open, it's going to be a standing wave. Other people didn't see it that way because it was also a new thing they were learning. Not everybody immediately understands what a standing wave or a traveling wave is, but by going through discussions like this, hopefully most of you at the end of the day will know what this is. Yes, there is going to be a standing wave there. Now, if at the low end, if instead of an open, we would have a resistor which is not 50 ohms, but 25 ohms, something like that, then we would have partial reflection, and we would have a partial standing wave. We are going to define this parameter called VSWR to characterize how much of a standing wave there is in a given circuit, okay? The extreme is full standing wave that is obtained, but that only comes if the reflection coefficient magnitude is unit. All right, so this is full standing wave. All right, what is the smallest value of L? The length. If I sub R is 2 amps, what is I sub R in this circuit? I sub R is this resistance. at the input end. So what this is really saying is that 2 amps is coming here, and then this is also 2 amps. That leaves I sub L to be equal to 0. If I sub L is equal to 0, what do we have there? An effective open or short? Open. We started with an open on the other end. We are encountering another open. And how far, what is the minimum distance between them? Non-zero? It has to be lambda over 2. That is lambda over 2. That's the answer. Okay. Or it can be lambda. It could be 4 lambda, whatever. But the minimum is lambda over 2. With the exception of lambda equals 0 is a possible answer. But, you know, then the picture wouldn't look like that. So that's an unreasonable answer, I would say. I don't know whether we put the caveat. What did we say? What is the smallest non-zero value? So we protected ourselves, but that's... Now, for L determined in part D, what is the phasor V at L over 2? So, then you have to sort of like imagine the V and I relationship in standing wave patterns, okay? So you have a current null here, a repeated current null there, and in between, exactly halfway between the two successive current nulls, there is a voltage null. So the answer is voltage is equal to 0. But the voltage is not equal to 0 at the two ends. And in fact, what is the voltage right here? That you should be able to obtain. It is 2 times 50. Okay? That resistor voltage is 100 volts, and therefore it is what we have over here. And then, so that's, then it goes through 0, and it should come to the other side as minus at a given time. At the same, at the instant you have 100 volts on one, it is minus 100 volts on the other end. Okay, so that was part E. For L determined in part D, still the same thing. Is I at halfway point equal to 0 a possibility? The answer is no. Because of the cosine behavior, it's fixed. The only way I at L equal to L divided by 2 can be 0 if the entire oscillation, current oscillation, is equal to 0. But we know that is not the case because the corresponding voltage is not equal to 0. We just discussed how the voltage is not equal to 0 at the input, which is 100 volts. Therefore, it is accompanied with a non-zero current distribution, and that current distribution has its zeros only at the two ends, not at the center. At the center, there is something. All right. Given that I at halfway point is equal to 0, what is the smallest value of L? Now you have to go to a full wavelength, right? Because now we have 3 nulls that we are seeing. For L determined in part H, what is V of L? And that is, again, the same answer, okay? We have a voltage maximum here, and that maximum voltage is going to be, or we have a current null at the load end, therefore we have all the entire 2 amperes running down the 2 ohm resistor, and that is the voltage. So that's pretty much the homework problem. So think about this as you are writing down the answers and handing it in, yes, on Tuesday. Yeah.
I have a question.
Yeah.
So when we were determining the voltage, mm-hmm. you said we could determine the voltage, the V0, mm-hmm. as 100. As 100.
Yes. Because you have it's really 100 cosine omega t, right? Yeah. That's what it is.
Oh, okay.
Right? Yeah. I'm talking about phasors. You have to go then into the time domain. But the point is that since the end point of the transmission line and the two terminals of the resistors are connected to the same nodes, since they are sharing the same nodes, they are in parallel. The fact that they are in parallel is best envisioned here, right? Okay. So things that are parallel have the same voltages. Therefore, the voltage that you measure for the current, for the resistor, is also the input voltage of the transmission line. Okay, yeah, that's it. Okay, so I think now I want to move on. Okay, so we what did we do? We after the bounce diagrams and the transient analysis, we step halfway into the world of sinusoidal steady state by examining the resonance phenomena, and we understood the importance of at any given frequency segment lengths of lambda over 2 and lambda over 4. We learned about the transition between open and closed or short behavior as the length changes. Even furthermore, we actually got a full impedance expression, okay, for this particular case. As Jim can see, it is very easily, this can be generalized into an open circuited line, but we are now poised to go beyond, right? We want to put an arbitrary element here and then do the analysis. That arbitrary element is not only going to be a resistance, but we can include now any complex impedance, meaning that we are also handling in sinusoidal steady state capacitors and inductors and whatnot. And furthermore, this doesn't have to be a lumped combo. It could be, there can be two different transmission lines that are continuous, which maybe ending up with lump combos. Something like that. We should be able to handle all such problems down the line. So we're gonna, of course, as the problem gets more complicated, we go to the phasor domain, we will stay in the phasor domain. Now we want general impedance expressions, and we will have to learn how general impedances, now general impedances of this type, with both real and imaginary parts, we are going to find that they are periodic, okay? As you back away from any given load towards the generator, the impedance depends how far away you are from the load, but it goes through cycles. And this cycle occurs, can be graphically represented on the complex plane, and that is what that Smith chart that I distributed is for. So we're gonna come to Smith charts. But not maybe today, but on Monday. Today, I wanna focus my analysis on yet another simplicity, not the full generality, but almost going there, but one step beyond, or one step earlier than the full generality. It is this. At any given frequency, we know the wavelength. If we only work with transmission line segments, connecting arbitrary resistance, capacitors, etc., to one another and to source circuits, but only using transmission lines whose lengths are integer multiples of lambda over 4, okay, either lambda over 4 or lambda over 2 or many times lambda over 2 or whatever times even or odd multiples of lambda over 4, then we can do the analysis without too much math using the rules of quarter wave transformer and half wave transformer. So we're going to learn about half and quarter wave transformer rules that obviates the need for using the Smith chart. That Smith chart is very valuable, but it takes a while to learn, okay? And sometimes you don't have your Smith chart. Sometimes you want to design a transmission line circuit. If you can remember the half wave and quarter wave transformer rules, which are easy to remember, you can do a lot of things, okay? In fact, because this is things are so easy with half and quarter wave transformers, a lot of RF engineers will design circuits that will be some combination of half and quarter wave transformers. This is what we want to learn. Okay, so with that, we go to our next lecture. Transmission line circuits with half and quarter wave transformers. Here's our general equation. This is what we want to handle in general for a load. But in this lecture, we will discuss sinusoidal steady state transmission line circuit problems having arbitrary reactive loads, but with line lengths L constrained to be integer multiples of lambda over 4. Okay, so that's the topic. So now in succession, we're going to look at two transformers. The first one is half wave transformer, which is a transmission line whose length is lambda over 2, okay? This has very easy rules. Lambda over 4, slightly more complicated, but then combining those, you are in a good shape. All right, lambda over 4 transformer. Here's the generic picture. I put an arbitrary load right here, and it is only lambda over 2, okay? What is the impedance, what is the relationship of the input voltage and input current to the load voltage and load current? These are the things that I want to examine. And if you know the impedance of this, what is the impedance looking in? These are the rules that I am after, okay? In order to address those questions, I go back to my phasor D'Alembert solutions. They are no longer D'Alembert, but phasor solutions of the telegrapher's equations. What are they? I have forward going wave phasor plus backward going wave phasor into the D notation, E to the plus J beta D, forward, backwards, and this is for the voltage. For the current, I take the difference and divide by Z naught, okay? All right, so then I have to now apply some boundary conditions, and the boundary conditions that I am going to have is going to be first evaluated at D equals zero. At D equals zero. What do we have at D equals to zero? So, Okay, no, that's not what I'm doing. I mixed up a lecture with another lecture. No, I pay attention to the exponential factors. Let's pay attention to the exponential factors. Because these exponential factors have beta, okay, and beta is 2 pi over lambda, and Rd is lambda over 2. So let's just pay attention to that. Okay, so e to the plus or minus j beta lambda over 2 works out to be minus 1. Because lambdas cancels, 2's cancel, I have e to the plus or minus j pi. Okay, that's exactly the number minus 1. It's the complex number that happens to be the real number minus 1. Okay, so I can go to my equation and relate now at the input location the general formula, okay, by replacing both of these exponential terms by minus 1. Okay, that's exactly what I do at the input point. All right, so I'm taking my general expression for the phasor as a function of d, evaluating at d equals lambda over 2, I am getting this thing. Minus and minus. What used to be pluses turn into two minuses. And that is, therefore, I can factor out the minus sign and say it is v plus plus v minus. But what is v plus v minus? It is v at d equals 0. V at d equals 0 is now showing up at the input point with a negation. So that's the main result, okay? So I see that my input voltage is the negative of the load voltage. That's observation number one. The same thing happens with the current, right? With the current, those two exponentials, again, turn into minus ones. Therefore, the V plus term gets a minus sign. What used to be minus turned into plus, and I recognize this to be the negation of the input current, or the load current. Okay, so therefore, the entire discussion boils down to this. Whenever I have a lambda over 2 transformer, I'm going to find at the input a voltage and current that is going to be the same as the voltage and current phases at the load, but there is going to be a negation of sign. That's it. Okay? So then, I know that the ratio of V to I at the load end is the impedance of that load. Okay? And then if I take this ratio, input impedance to input current, input voltage to input current, I'm going to have the same ratio as with the two negative signs on the numerator and denominator as the loads. Those are going to cancel out. I have the same input impedance. So lambda over 2 away, the input impedance is repeated. We have already seen this to be the case in our J Z naught 10 beta L equation. We have seen that there is a periodicity, but now we are seeing that periodicity is more general. It is coming out from the structure of the phasor D'Alembert solution. It's just the fact that e to the plus and minus j beta d evaluates to minus 1 exactly gives that result. Yes?
No, it doesn't matter what z naught is.
It doesn't matter what z naught is. Exactly. It is independent of z naught. You have whatever impedance you put, okay, on any transmission line, okay, of course, in some sense, z naught does matter because it has to be a lossless transmission line. A lossless transmission line of z naught gives us a real value of z naught. In the very last lecture of the of the semester, we're going to look at lossy lines, and we'll see that z naught becomes complex value, then there is variations, okay? But for the ideal lossless case, it doesn't matter what z naught is. The impedance repeats, okay? Any questions? All right, so that is it. The impedance repeats, and the voltages are negated. If I tell you the voltage here, you know the voltage there, just flip its sign, okay? But it's a phasor, okay? So then you can take that phasor and go to the time domain. But that still flips the sign in the time domain. Okay, when you flip the sign of a phasor, you flip the sign also in the time domain. That's it, very easy. Lambda over 2 transformers are very easy. Okay, so now we're gonna go to lambda over 4 transformer, and what's going to be the difference? It's going to be a similar derivation, but we're gonna evaluate that animal and not lambda over 2, but lambda over 4. And that is going to give us j factors rather than minus 1 factor. Let's see what that takes us to. So here is the evaluation. When we consider now e to the plus and minus j beta lambda over 4, that beta is lambda over 2, these cancel out. We have e to the plus or minus j pi over 2. E to the plus and minus j pi over 2 is the same thing as plus or minus j. Now we have to carefully transport this plus and minus j's into the equations that we are working with and read some conclusions. Okay, so for the voltage. For the voltage, I have a positive J coming here and a minus J coming here, okay? Therefore, it becomes like this. At the input point, I have JB plus minus JB minus, okay? So now, if I factor out J, I have V plus minus V minus. That is not like voltage was, but that is what current was like, right? At the load end, the current was the difference divided by Z naught. So I reach this point, and then I say, hey, I can represent it in this fashion. It is J times the current at the load end times Z0. This Z0 is needed there because the current was not simply V plus minus V minus. It was V plus minus V minus divided by Z naught, okay? So therefore, it is needed there. And if you look at this, if you're going to express a voltage to be proportional to current, you need a Z naught anyway. You need some impedance, and that is the right impedance, okay? So input impedance and the load current on a quarter wave transformer are related in this fashion, okay? There is a J, there is a 90, J means a 90 degree phase shift. Hey, that makes sense. When you sort of like propagate across a land over, you sort of expect a 90 degree, so that is not very surprising. So I hear that, finally write this, input voltage is J times the load current Z naught. So that's an important equation, okay? So we do the same sort of a thing for the input current. We evaluate now this guy at plus and minus J for e to the plus and minus J beta lambda over 4. When we do that, okay, that minus sign goes away, it becomes a plus sign. And if I factor J out, V plus plus V minus, I recognize that as my V naught. Okay? And then finally I write, input current is equal to load voltage divided by Z naught times J. 90 degree phase shifts are coming into here. All right, so those look like hard to remember. But what you really need to remember is either this, or even better this. And I'm going to call this quarter wave current forcing equation, and will depend on this equation in the long run. All right? But here are basically my results. Okay? If I take, so what I'm going to do is, more than anything else, take this equation. This is an important conclusion. I will solve it for Isabel. So in other words, I will take J and Z naught and put it on the other side, underneath V, okay? And when I do that, I will get the equation that we see on the top. J from the bottom comes to the top as minus J. V in is being divided by Z naught. That is my current forcing equation. Typically, we need to go from the input to the output, input to the load. We will typically know the input voltage, and we will be wondering, what is the load current and load voltage? In that context, this is the most important equation, okay? So, how do you remember that equation? You remember it as follows. My load current should certainly be proportional to the input voltage that I'm driving it. Okay, certainly the proportionality constant should be such that in the end I have amperes instead of volts. The only thing that is floating as impedance here is the load impedance and the characteristic impedance. But my derivation surprisingly gives me a result that is independent of the load impedance. Okay, surprisingly it gives me, it's such a surprising result that you're going to remember it. Okay, independent of what that load impedance is. Okay, you are always going to divide your input voltage by the characteristic impedance. And that minus J is that there is a delay at the load end with respect to the input end. That is what it says. That's how you're going to remember that. If you remember that equation, which is easy to remember, then you don't have to remember this equation. This equation, which is true, doesn't have to be remembered. Because if you know already that, load voltage is obviously that times the impedance. You can get it that way. Whatever impedance you have, you know the current through that impedance, and you multiply the current with the impedance of that element, you have that. Okay, one equation is basically that is good for you. And you may say, how come, like, what if this were an open, okay, would this still be true? What do you guys guess? If it were an open, that is still going to be true, but if it were an open, that current is going to be also equal to zero. If that current is equal to zero, and that equation is still true, what does it mean? V input is equal to zero. Is there any reason why the input should be zero? Why the input voltage is zero if this is an open? Brian, is there any reason if this is an open, the input voltage should be zero? Yes. If this is open, on this blackboard or the screen, there is enough reason for the input voltage to be zero. Yeah. An open turns into a short. Now, what if you take a voltage source that is non-zero and put a short on it? You don't do that, right? Yeah, that you don't do that, okay? That becomes inconsistent, okay? Then things that you have neglected in your models come into picture. You know that there is going that voltage source is going to have an internal resistance, okay? That voltage drops, that battery, let's say battery, that battery's voltage output is going to drop to zero because you put a short, because it's going to be behaving, it's feeding the current to the short. It's heating itself, it's going to explode or something like that. It's not going to be good for the health of the battery. So this is a magic equation. It's a current forcing equation, okay? The impedance itself of the load doesn't come into the picture. Only the characteristic impedance of the line and the fact that you are using a Land Rover Ford transformers comes into the picture. So it is such an exciting, weird result is that it is usually remembered in the long run, okay? Any questions? So you know the voltage, you get the current at the other end of the transformer, you get that current, you will get the voltage because you know the impedance, etc., etc. That's how you solve these problems. Ah, we forgot something. We talked about the voltage and currents on the two ends of the line, but we forgot about impedance. Let's look at now the impedance. Since we had already, before we got into the current forcing equation, these neat results for the input voltage and input current, to get the input impedance, all we need to do is divide them. Okay, let's see what that takes us into. Okay, so this is a little bit boring. The result is important. Input impedance turns out to be, after things cancel out, and VL over IL is recognized to be the load impedance. So Z naught square over ZL, okay? So Z input is this thing. Most people remember it like this. You have a quarter wave transformer. It is loaded with some ZL. You're wondering what the input impedance is. And it is riding on a lossless transmission line with characteristic impedance zero. Everybody remembers this rule as Z in times ZL is equal to Z naught squared. That is the gist of the quarter wave transformer impedance transformation. Okay? Now, halfway, what happened to the impedance? Came back to be the same thing. In this case, it's not the same thing. Okay? So another way of writing the same equation would be something like this. I can take Z0 from this side and put it underneath these ZLs. Okay? So then I can have Z in divided by Z0 multiplying Z log divided by Z0 is equal to 1. Okay? And it is now time to introduce perhaps what we will be calling as normalized impedances. The impedances at the input point, the impedances at the load point is very meaningfully normalized by the characteristic impedance of the line. So that then we can write this same equation. We don't need this equation anymore. Little z for normalized impedance multiplying the little z for the load is equal to 1, not 0. That's another way of looking at this, okay? And then you can say z little input is 1 over z little, okay? So apparently the normalized impedance is being inverted by a quarter wave transformer. That's what's happening. Maybe that is also an easy way of remembering it, of course, implied completely by this equation as well. So quarter wave transformation, you have the inverse of a complex number. This little ZL in general is going to be a complex number because it will be a capacitor in series with a resistor or something like that, or inductor. You'll have your load impedance will be 50 plus J50. You will normalize it with 50 ohm characteristic impedance of the line. So you'll have a normalized load impedance of 1 plus J1. Okay, the input normalized impedance is going to be 1 over 1 plus J. That is the inverse. Okay? All right. But we can even say one more thing. What is the inverse of an impedance anyways at any given location? Admittance. Okay? What if you were to normalize admittance? You would have a little y, which would be YL divided by Y naught. Okay? Y naught. And what if you were to invert little z? You would get little y. Okay? So in a sense, what you are here seeing is the inversion of little z is really little y. The normalized load admittance happens to be the normalized input impedance if you have a quarter wave transformer in between. So these are things that you have to sort of like learn along the way. I mean, you will learn some fraction of this to be successful in the exam, but RF engineers know this all the time by heart. Any questions? All right, so let's do some examples now. Start with an easy one. I have an inductive load. 50 plus J50 is inductive because the J part is positive. The reactance is positive, so I call that an inductive circuit. Okay? And I want to find out what is the input impedance looking at a quarter wave transformer away. I use this formula. I use that formula in its full glory. I don't use the normalized impedance, but it's just the stuff that you can do because you have taken EC. You had a lot of complex number experience. Some of the 50s go away. 1 plus J1, then you multiply the numerator and denominator with the conjugate of the denominator, and you get 25 minus J25. And that is capacitive because the imaginary part is negative. All right, so you start with an inductive load. You step back, have a quarter wave, you find an inductive load. What if you have stepped back a full half wavelength? You would have ended up with what you started with, it would have been capacitive. So you go back and forth between capacitive inductive behavior on a transmission line, depending on the length of the transmission line and how far you are backing away from the load towards the generator. This concept of going, moving from the load towards the generator or vice versa, from generator side to the load side, is an important sort of way of thinking about these transmission line circuits. On the transmission line, on the Smith chart, let me point out one fact here. There is so much detail here, that is why I distributed the other thing, right? The other thing is my handwritten version of it, which sort of like tries to demystify all this thing. But one thing that you can see here, read what it says in the periphery. Wavelengths towards generator. Do you guys see wavelengths towards generator? Okay, and then there is another arrow that is going the other direction. And that is wavelengths towards load, okay? On this chart, you circulate when you use this chart, either clockwise or counterclockwise, depending on whether you are thinking of solving the problem by moving from the load end towards the generator end or vice versa. And that is why you have those indications, okay? And I will sort of like explain all this step by step. My next example. The load and the transformer of example one are connected to a source with a voltage phasor of 100 volts at the input port. This is the guy, right? This guy, now I connect it with I specified the voltage. Once I specify the voltage, Brian, I know what that current is going to be at the load. What are you going to use? Current forcing equation. What are you going to say? Minus J times voltage divided by Z naught. That's the answer. And if somebody asks, what about the voltage at that load? You're going to take whatever that number comes up and multiply it with the load impedance, which was 50 plus J50. That's going to give you the load voltage. Of course, the load voltage and load current are not going to be in phase because there is this angle, right? If the impedance was purely real, they would be in phase. If you had a resistor, you would end up with voltage and current that are in phase. But we have an inductive load, and it's not going to be in phase. All right, and then what is the last question there? What about the power that is consumed by that? What is the time average power consumed by the load? Okay, so we very quickly get to that answer. Isn't this nice? We start with 100 volts and boom, we have the answer. So since we have I sub L and V sub L, we just go 1/2 real part of I sub L, V sub L, I sub L conjugate. And that gives us 100 watts. Very easy, very easy. Now, this same problem would have been a help if the length of the line wasn't a quarter wave, but some weird length. If it was 0.2 lambdas, you would have to do a lot of more work than getting this result. Yes? And we will learn how to do that, okay? But using the Smith chart and all that.
Just out of basic curiosity, how much percentage of error in application would quarter or half wave be? Like, if we're off by, like,
You want to say, okay, just like common sense must answer that to you. You want to be, let's say that your wavelength is 3 meters, okay? Let's say 6 meters, quarter wavelength 1.5 meters, 1 centimeter, 2 centimeters, 1 inch, you can tolerate. Good question, perfect question. I worry about this all the time. You might say, why? Because I run this radar in Peru, okay? The radar that I run in Peru works with 50 megahertz frequency. This is why I picked up 6 meters. At 50 megahertz, the wavelength is 6 meters, okay? And it is connected, the transmitter is connected to the radar antenna through a network of transmission lines. Okay, these transmission lines break, they split into two, combine, etc., etc. They do all sorts of weird things.
Combos,
yeah. And every time you combine things, okay, sometimes you have to go through matching sections, etc. You have to cut things, quarter wavelength, half wavelength. We do this all the time, okay? And so my quarter wavelength is 1.5 meters, okay? And if it is not done carefully, you're going to suffer for it. But you have a leeway of a few centimeters, okay? It depends. The answer to such questions, of course, always depends on what are your ultimate objectives. I mean, in certain applications, that may not be tolerable. In other things, it may be tolerable. But in this case, it's the phase that matters, right? It is the phase. And quarter wavelength means 90-degree phase. And, can you afford 10 degree of uncertainty in your phase? Typically, that starts becoming bad. A few degrees, you can sometimes tolerate. Good question. I think we ran out of time. So homework, you guys have relaxed a little bit. We're collecting it on Tuesday. And the other homework, start working on it. So start working on the first 4 problems of the homework that you Thursday. You can really do number 1 to 3, and number 4 is optional.